It's Monday, July 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama is in Africa and visits his father's homeland. But the Iran nuclear deal remains for his return to Washington.
فالدول المتمسكة بحقوقها لابد وأن تنتصر. وخير مثال على ذلك هو ما حققته الشقيقة إيران.
Syria's president remains defiant. Also ahead, the robot population is increasing.
Dylan had always liked rock and roll, and Dylan didn't think of rock and roll as stupid music.
The electrifying Bob Dylan, all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama bid farewell to Kenya on Sunday with a major speech at a stadium outside of the capital, Nairobi, where he called on Kenyans to change the cultures of corruption and discrimination that can hold society back. We hear more now from VOA East Africa correspondent Gabe Joslow.
President Obama got personal during his speech to the Kenyan people, recalling the struggles of his Kenyan father and how times have changed since he first visited the country 27 years ago.
Saying the first time I came to Kenya, things were a little different. When I arrived at Kenyatta Airport, the airline had lost my bags. That doesn't happen on Air Force One.
In a wide-ranging speech, Mr. Obama praised Kenyan progress in the 50 years since independence, but called on the people to address the serious challenges still facing the country.
I want to be very clear here. A politics that's based solely on tribe and ethnicity is a politics that's doomed to tear a country apart. It is a failure. Terrorists who try to sow chaos, they must be met with force and a They must also be met, though, with a forceful commitment to uphold the rule of law and respect for human rights. Here in Kenya, it's time to change habits and decisively break that cycle, because corruption holds back every aspect of economic and civil life.
As Mr. Obama left the stadium, some young leaders who attended the speech said they were moved by the president's words, particularly his encouragement for young people and women.
What I loved most about his speech is that he told the youth that hope lies with us, that the future lies with us, that solutions are not in America, solutions are not abroad.
It was a very good point even to emphasize that women are the changers of the world.
This was President Obama's final day in Kenya. He left later for Ethiopia, where he will meet with that country's government and leaders of the African Union. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
President Obama is now in Ethiopia for 2 days of talks focused on terrorism, human rights, and the civil war in South Sudan. The president was welcomed Sunday at the Addis Ababa airport by Ethiopia's prime minister and was taken to the U.S. embassy for a meeting with embassy staff. Later today, Mr. Obama is to hold bilateral talks with Ethiopian leaders and convene a meeting of East African heads of state to discuss the South Sudan conflict. This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has visited Ethiopia, which has been a key U.S. ally in the fight against the al-Qaeda-linked militant group al-Shabaab. The White House has said Mr. Obama will raise the issue of Ethiopia's human rights record. Rights groups have strongly criticized the government for imprisoning journalists and political opponents and turning Ethiopia into a one-party state. Well, for more reaction to the visit on social media, we turn to our G. Abby Lee, who is here in the studio to bring us the latest. Hi, G.
Hello, Jim. Let's take a look at President Obama's Twitter at POTUS. That's at POTUS. Mr. Obama tweeted Friday, "Proud to be the first American president to visit Kenya, happy to see family and to talk with young Kenyans about the future." That's been retweeted nearly 18,000 times and marked as a favorite almost 29,000 times.
Well, how about his Kenyan counterpart, the president of Kenya?
Mr. Kenyatta has been quite prolific on Twitter. His first tweet about Obama's visit was on Friday when he tweeted, "Welcome to Kenya at POTUS." That simple tweet has been shared more than 1,300 times. Kenyatta is on Twitter at UKenyatta. He retweeted Mr. Obama's tweet that I just mentioned and shared photos of his arrival, participation at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, bilateral talk state dinner, as well as his departure to Ethiopia.
Well, there are always hashtags. Which hashtags were used for this visit?
Well, to answer that question, let's turn to the social media analytics website Topsy. Hashtag Obama in Kenya was used more than 30,000 times during the last 24 hours. And in the same time frame, hashtag GES2015 and hashtag GES2015Kenya were used around 3,000 times and 17,000 times, respectively.
So Obama in Kenya, hashtag that is, was used more than the other two hashtags about the event combined.
That's right. And Jim, before I go, I want to turn your attention to the most shared dance video on Twitter Sunday, starring President Obama. It's a clip of Obama dancing with his half-sister and a Kenyan dancing group. So the original clip first appeared on the group Salty Soul's Instagram and later shared on Twitter by Washington-based journalist Femi Oak with Al Jazeera. That's all for me today. Jim?
All right. I'm going to go click on the dance video shortly and watch it. Thanks for the update, G. International Edition's social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Glad you could join us. As President Obama returns to Washington this week, he faces an ongoing challenge: acceptance of the Iran nuclear deal in Congress. Michael Bowman is our correspondent in the Senate. Today he's in our studio. Michael, the Obama administration has been pushing hard for the approval of this deal on Capitol Hill, but it seems to remain an uphill struggle.
The administration sent its top lieutenant, Secretary of State John Kerry, and many others to Capitol Hill on multiple occasions over the last few days, trying to tell lawmakers and trying to sell lawmakers on the idea that it either we negotiate successfully and peacefully with Iran or we are on a path to war. Over the course of these last few days, those who have been criticizing the deal, their opposition has only hardened and become more vociferous and more strident. Among those who are at least open to the deal, who haven't made up their mind, very few of them have come forward in support of the deal. So I would not say that the administration's initial efforts to sell this deal to Congress have met with any great success. Congress will be going on its annual August recess shortly, and they will likely schedule votes in the House and the Senate on the Iran deal when they get back in September. It's looking right now very much like the Republican-controlled Congress will reject the deal in both chambers, which will trigger a promised presidential veto of those motions of disapproval. And the question really becomes, will enough of President Obama's Democratic supporters in both houses come together to save the deal?
A bit of drama there. We'll see if the pen is mightier than the vote. Speaking of recess, Congress is going to be hitting the road, and the roads are in pretty bad shape. They haven't done anything with that and a few other issues.
Anyone who gets into a car almost anywhere in the country will notice that an awful lot of our roads and bridges and main thoroughfares are in really bad shape. This gets back to a number of facts. Most of the federal highway funding is paid for by a gasoline tax, which has remained the same for two decades. It has not increased. And so this 19 cent per gallon, I don't know what that is per liter, but here in the United States, we're still on the old English system. this 19 cent per gallon tax has not been increased. And the value of the dollar has gone down. The cost of doing these road improvements has gone up. And so that amount of money that's being collected simply is not covering the bill that is required every year to keep roads and bridges in good condition.
And some jurisdictions have even levied or proposed to levy a pay-as-you-go tax to pay for their roads.
There are a number of sort of creative solutions that individual states and individual jurisdictions have tried to come up with to deal with this. But there's a lot of frustration on this.
And there are some other issues that are hanging just as important as Congress goes on recess.
Indeed, Jim. The Export-Import Bank, which is the mechanism by which many of America's goods to the world are financed. It is the entity that handles that. Its charter ran out, so it's no longer functioning. And Congress doesn't have a path to get this back on track. There are many Republicans who view the Export-Import Bank as some sort of crony capitalistic institution. But we really don't know how this will iron itself out. I mean, I feel a little bad talking to you, Jim, because I'm supposed to be all-knowing as our Senate correspondent. But I have to be honest, there are many issues before Congress right now where I can't tell you with any certainty how it's going to shake out.
Many mysteries abound in Congress and in the Senate. Our perennial man of mystery, Michael Bowman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, Congress and the rest of the world watching developments in the Middle East, where Syrian President Bashar al-Assad delivered a defiant speech on state television Sunday, insisting that while the Syrian army has had to pull back from certain regions for strategic reasons, the government would ultimately prevail. Reporting for VOA from Cairo, we hear more now from Edward Uranian.
The crowd applauded as President Bashar al-Assad described the conflict in Syria as an existential battle against terrorists and outside armies supported by powerful regional and international states. He insisted Syria has not and will not give in to outside pressure.
فالدول المتمسكة بحقوقها لابد وأن تنتصر.
He said countries that stand up for their rights ultimately go on to win their battles, as Iran eventually did in its nuclear negotiations with the world community. The speech, carried live on Syrian state TV, was repeatedly scrambled by hackers, making parts of it barely intelligible. It was the first time the Syrian president has addressed a large crowd in more than a year. Mr. Assad claimed what he called terrorist states were increasing their aid to various proxies in order to create desperation among the Syrian people. He said his government favored a political solution to the four-year-old conflict, but insisted it would not capitulate. He says he supports a negotiated solution to the conflict. President Assad said his forces have pulled back from certain regions of the country in order to defend those areas with the most military and economic significance. But he stressed the Syrian people must remain united despite philosophical, political, and sectarian differences. The Syrian president also said electricity cuts, fuel shortages, and water outages are part of the economic war being waged on his government. Mr. Assad concluded by thanking soldiers and civil servants fighting in the shadows and paying a heavy price. He also thanked Syria's main allies, Iran, Russia, China, and Lebanon's Hezbollah group, for supporting his government in its time of need. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
From the entertainment and service industries to manufacturing, medicine, rescue operations, and even sports, machines with artificial intelligence, or what we usually call robots, are slowly but steadily replacing people. As VOA's George Pudich reports, for a young generation, building robots may soon be as popular as building blocks.
Machines now can easily replace human workers in labor-intensive jobs, such as sorting and packing products, assembling car bodies, or moving heavy objects. Robots can also help patients that need physical therapy. But they are also slowly entering our daily lives. But if these machines look too slow and artificial in their movements, there's a new generation of roboticists getting ready to create better and faster versions.
It's a fun place that you can code and do all sorts of programming, programming robots, programming games.
Finally, before going to bed, a quartet of cuddly robotic bears may play you a little tune to make you warm and happy. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
Well, it was a different kind of music 50 years ago, and that amount of time has passed since Bob Dylan played the music that shocked the audience at the Newport Folk Festival. What did he do? Well, he plugged in his guitar and embraced the new wave of electric sound. Those reverberations of his guitar define popular music as we know it today. VOA's Eric Felton plugs us into that earlier time.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Oh, the times, they are a-changing.
In the mid-1960s, the times, they were indeed a-changing. One of the places those changes were being felt was the world of folk music, says rock historian Elijah Wald, author of a new book, Dylan Goes Electric.
There was a moment in the early 60s where you could look at the Billboard charts and seven of the top 10 albums were folk records. And, you know, Joan Baez, Peter, Paul and Mary, the Kingston Trio, all had huge, huge, huge number one records.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning, I'd a hammer in the evening. All over the
and then all that changed.
In 1964, the Beatles had hit. By 1965, by the summer of 1965, a lot of people in the folk scene were sort of feeling like their world was threatened.
They were hoping that Bob Dylan would come to the rescue. Dylan had become a legend in folk music circles, both as a powerful songwriter and a distinctive singer. Most of the crowd at the Newport Folk Festival on the evening of July 25th, 1965, we're expecting to hear this.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Instead, when Dylan took the stage, this is what they got. Bob Dylan had gone electric, and the folk purists didn't like it one bit. But
Dylan had always liked rock and roll, and Dylan didn't think of rock and roll as stupid music.
In fact, Dylan was a Beatles fan. He would later say that from the first time he heard the Beatles, he knew they were pointing to the direction where music had to go.
Honestly, once the Beatles hit, I think that the writing was on the wall. But when Dylan went with the Beatles on that one, that was that. That was essentially the end of the folk scene as a huge mainstream pop trend.
Beyond the music, Dylan's performance that night also marked a turning point in American culture.
Before 1965 was really a different world, and it's the 60s of the civil rights movement and of folk music and of joining arms across the generations and across the races. And after 1965, it's the world of rock. And obviously, I'm not saying Dylan created that change, but I do think that the confrontation at Newport happened because it was symbolic of that much larger confrontation and has been remembered because it really is sort of the moment of rupture where the new 60s emerged.
For VOA News, I'm Eric Felton.
For those of a certain age, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. And for those younger, well, it's great to find out and enjoy and relate to that music and how it is today. Well, if you'd like to hear more, you can always go to our Facebook page. VOA Asia is where our Facebook page resides. And on Twitter, we're at VOA_IE. Of course, our website is voanews.com. We thank you for listening to International Edition and joining us, and we hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to human rights organizations and Chinese activists, in recent weeks, Chinese authorities have systematically detained, arrested, subjected to forced disappearance, held incommunicado, or questioned and released 169 lawyers, legal staff, and activists involved in peacefully challenging official policies in China. Chinese authorities detained lawyers from several law firms, including six from the Beijing Fengrui firm. The Fengrui law firm handled a number of high-profile human rights cases, including the case of jailed Uyghur scholar Ilham Tohati. The crackdown began on July 9th when Fengrui lawyer Wang Yu disappeared after alerting friends via a text message that her internet connection and electricity had been cut off and that people were trying to break into her home. Wang had represented several clients involved in human rights activism or religious freedom issues, including practitioners of Falun Gong, a religious group banned in China. The firm's director, Zhu Shifeng, was also detained. He had represented Zhang Miao, a Chinese journalist who'd reported on the Hong Kong democracy protests. Among those who have not been heard from since being detained is well-known lawyer Lu Heping. He represented fellow lawyer and blind activist Chen Guangcheng and helped victims of forced evictions. The United States is deeply concerned that the broad scope of China's new national security law is being used as a legal facade to commit human rights abuses. The U.S. strongly urges China to respect the rights of all its citizens and to release all those who have recently been detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.